Hey everybody, welcome. Today is the 40th anniversary of the first ever Ironman triathlon, and in honor of that date back February 18th, 1978, we have with us the first ever Ironman World Champion. His name is Gordon Heller. Woo! Oh my God! That is so cool. You guys are the best. All right. So excited to have you with us, Gordon. First of all, take me back. Growing up in Oregon, what were your sports?
I started out trying to play baseball and then moved into cycling when I was four, swimming when I was six, running when I was eight.
And battling your brother, 14 months younger than you were, throughout high school and college, what were those races like?
Well, it was a constant battle from grade school on. He usually won when mom was there, and I usually won when dad was there, but they were never there at the same time, so we're not sure what would happen if they did show up.
And out of college, did you continue running? Were you running the roads? What was happening?
So I was keeping my mileage up around 150 a month until I got to Hawaii, which was actually on the Navy's birthday in October, Friday the 13th of 1972. And I met a guy at the exchange.
Yes.
Saw my marathon T-shirt and asked if I wanted to be on the team. I said, "How do I do that?" "Well, I'll just run this race with us on Sunday and around Diamond Head, and you'll be fine." So I ran the race, beat everybody on the team, and they let me be on the team. The team was for the relay around the island, which became the
perimeter relay.
The perimeter, which was where they started talking about an event called an Ironman later, years later.
Years later.
Yeah.
So you're at that point, though, you would. Been doing some weights. You're up to 180 pounds, and you still, what did you run for that 5 miles?
It was like 25, 12, somewhere in there.
So you killed everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. So obviously had a little bit of a talent. Your running increased while you were with that team and while you were with that club, and what did your marathon times drop to?
Well, I started about 240. Actually, before that, I did a 249 workout on Groundhog Day just for the fun of it, accidentally.
Yeah.
And then I went to Oregon, did a 247. Then I came back to Oahu, did a 244. And then did the perimeter relay.
Yep.
And a week later did Maui in 239.
That's a lot of running in a short period of time.
It was. Well, when I next tried another marathon in June, which was the national championships in San Mateo, I bombed out in 259.
Oh, yeah, it's awful.
Didn't really recover until December when I ran when I ran a 235.
So, and your PR for the marathon is what?
227.37.
And where'd you run that?
That was the Marine Corps Marathon in November of 77.
So, November 77. And when did you hear about this iron thing? I mean, and what were you doing? You were in the military, but weren't you also driving a taxi?
I drove a taxi for the year prior to the first Ironman.
And
I didn't drive it after that.
And but you didn't own a car?
No.
And you had a half-decent bike?
I did have a bike.
And what, Reynolds tubing? I mean, this was a nice bike.
It was a 531 tubing, yeah. My brother still has that bike.
Very cool. And so now, your day, you take somebody, you drive somebody taxi fare, and then you'd get a run-in, like 2 mile runs or so. So when I looked at your training log leading into the Ironman, what was your run mileage, what, in that last 4 or 5 weeks leading into Ironman?
Well, in the last 17 days of the month leading up to that race, I ran 187 miles.
187 miles. And how many miles cycling?
About 50.
How much swimming?
I think I swam 8 times for a total of maybe 12,000 yards.
12,000 yards.
Yeah,
okay.
Well, that's like,
yeah.
Ala Moana had this 1,000 meter course, and I'd swim it and walk back, and the next day or 2 days later I'd go swim it one more time. Once in a while I'd swim down and back. That's how I got to be 12 out of 8.
So when did you hear about this Ironman thing?
Well, after the Marine Corps Marathon, I stayed on the mainland for a month and ran a couple of races. I actually won a race in the Mojave Desert.
Nice.
I don't know how I did that, but it was a short one. It was like 8 miles.
Yeah.
And then I went back to Hawaii just in time for the Honolulu Marathon, jumped in. Back then, you could register like the day before. Can't do that now. Anyway, I got in the race and ran about 6 miles, and the sciatica started to crop up that I actually had during my Marine Corps Marathon. I had to stop a bunch of times there to stretch it out. And so in Honolulu, I decided I'm not going to stretch it. I'm just going to stop.
Right.
And where I stopped was next to a guy I knew, and I can't remember his name now, but he said, hey, they invented a race for you, because he'd known that I could swim and bike and run and all those things. And I said, oh, really? Sounds good. So when I saw an ad in the newspaper for the Collins House to come and talk about it,
yeah,
I said, hey, I'm there.
And a lot of the other folks in the event, really, it's not like they did a lot of, they probably did a little bit of running or a little bit of swimming, but not many people had all three skills, right? In that first Ironman on February 18, 1978, there was 15 people in the race total, 12 finishers. And when you looked around, how many of the people in the race did you know?
There were probably three.
Three, okay. And take us through, back then you had support crews. You had a crew with you the whole day. Who was on your crew?
Well, I had most of them worked at the fitness center where I worked, the Nautilus Fitness Center. It was my
right.
personal sponsor the first 2 years, and then they sponsored the whole Ironman the next 2 years. But I had this guy, Steve Epperle, who was my team manager, so to speak.
Yeah. And
he was a former modern pentathlete. He was also a masseuse and a very good organizer. We had two vehicles, had a photographer and a cook and two drivers and somebody to ride a bike with me while I was running. And somebody to run with me right at the very end. So I had a lot of people helping out. And the cook made great chocolate chip cookies.
And you also had two bikes.
I did have two bikes. They rented a really nice racing bike from the McCulley Bike Shop in Honolulu.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, they had their little small sprocket. So the flat part of the first part of the race was pretty flat. And that was okay. Then when it started raining, we got to where we had to go up over the
stair-step climb.
I needed
yeah.
some gears, so my bike had 28. So even though it weighed 30 pounds, it got me up the hill better that way. And then it was a real advantage coming down again with that weight. So
you switched bikes during the Ironman, basically. You used two separate bikes.
I did.
Nice. So you broke all the rules.
Well.
Of course, there were no rules.
There were no rules, yes.
You did whatever you wanted to. So you were about 20 minutes down, I think, out of the water to Dunbar. All right, John Dunbar.
And that was on a good day.
Yes, and then you gained, I think, about 8 minutes or so during a bike ride, right?
That's true.
And so when you're in the marathon, when did you start? Was there a point where you started? And again, remember, there's no roads blocked off. You really don't know where the other guys are. When did you start seeing Dunbar? And you guys, didn't you pass each other a bunch of times?
Well, he didn't pass me ever. But I caught him several times. I caught him the first time at 15 miles or so, and I had a cramp in my hamstrings. I had a quick massage, so he got away from me.
Right.
Then about 17, I had to go to the bathroom, so I stopped and had to catch back up with him again. And then at 19 or 20, somewhere in there, I had another cramp and had to do another massage. And I was thinking, every time I stop, I catch back up with him. What if I don't stop?
What a concept.
So I caught him.
Keep running.
I caught him at 21, and I looked at him, and this had to be after his comment about having his crew give him a beer.
So basically, John Dunbar he's a Navy SEAL, and his crew ran out of water. So they needed something liquid, and they happened to have beer. So here he is 20 miles or so into the Ironman Marathon drinking beer.
Well, it was Hawaii, and it was Primo beer, so...
Yes, it was good beer. What did he look like when you went by him, at mile 21?
Death warmed over. He looked over at me with his white face, and he just went... And I said, okay, I'm running from here. I feel good.
And you ran that last 5 miles how fast?
About 30 minutes.
Nice. And you say, I mean, it's funny, because you look at the splits, and you ran a 3:30 marathon. He ran 4:03, but really a lot of that was in the last 5-6 miles that you made up a lot of ground.
All of it. Well, I made up the 12 minutes over 21 miles, and
right.
then 33 minutes over the last 5 miles.
So as you're coming towards the finish, this is the first ever Ironman World Championship. There's cheerleaders, there's crowds, there's all sorts of media there. What was at the finish line?
Two guys in lawn chairs and a yellow line across the road.
They had the cheerleaders behind them?
No, it was dark.
There was nobody there.
They might have had crickets.
So what'd they say to you?
Are you in the race?
Yes, I am.
I said, yes. And they said, well, you're done. And the fan went wild.
The fan went wild. And then everybody in the race got the hole-in-the-head trophy, right, that John Collins made.
Everybody finished.
Yes, everybody who finished. So the 12 people got that hole. And they didn't do that there. They did that at the post-race.
Later, yeah.
And you had to bring a shirt, right, to get the finisher shirt. It's your own shirt.
We supplied our own T-shirts, and we could bring extras. I brought enough for my whole crew.
Right.
And then John built the...
John screened it.
Screened him, and there we go.
John Collins became a screen printer as well as a welder. And for folks who were at our Ironman Revisited a number of years ago, Daniel Polino was there. John was kind enough to make the Ironman hole-in-the-head trophies for all of our finishers. And I think the night before the race, I got a call from the people who ran the hotel that we were staying at that somebody had set up the fire alarm because they were welding in their room, which was a little bit of an issue.
Oops.
Yeah. But anyway, so now all the sponsors are coming out of the woodwork. You're the first Ironman World Champion. How did that change your life?
Well, first of all, that's a lie. Nobody came to do anything. No sponsors, no nothing.
Nothing.
Never, no.
So you went back to driving your taxi?
Nope. I went on to other things. I guess I stayed there for a little while and did odd things. I gave surf reports on the radio, sold rainbow cleaners door to door. And let's see, what else did I do?
You were probably one of the highest paid triathletes at that point.
Well, because nobody got any pay, sure.
So how many times have you done Ironman since?
Well, I've done a total of 23 Ironman distance races. 17 of them are, no, 20, 20 of them are Ironman branded.
Yeah, and how many in Hawaii?
Well, all but three of those.
Okay. And so this year when you do Ironman on the 40th anniversary, that will be number 17, number 18?
18 of those, but 24 for the distance.
Right, but 18 of those on the big.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I remember we all watched the finish with Julie Moss and Kathleen McCartney in 82, and I'm watching that and going, wait a second, I think Gordon just ran by. You were in that video, right?
You did see me there. The guy in the yellow shirt and the white hat right in front of Kathleen was me. But of course, nobody's watching me.
No.
They're watching Julie.
Did you see Julie on the ground?
Yeah, it was pretty hard to miss her.
Yeah. You are correct. So you're part of the history with the first Ironman. You're part of the most important moment in the history of triathlon, which was Julie's crawl right across the line. When you kept coming back and seeing this event that started with 15 starters and 12 finishers, what was your thought as you saw it growing from, you know, 15 to 108 to 300 to national television? What was your thought about the growth of this sport?
Well, I thought it was pretty amazing, but I also thought it was pretty cool because that would give me more opportunities to do the same kind of thing in more different places than just the one.
Right. And there was something about this sport. What was it about this sport and the event that really connected with you?
Well, at first it was just being able to place real high in races because I like to win races. But after the first one, I didn't win anymore and I found other reasons to like the event.
Right.
And probably one of the neatest things about it, well, besides the neatest thing is meeting everybody that does triathlons.
Right.
But I was thinking about it on a philosophical level. In the middle of the night, when you don't feel so good anymore and you might have 9, 10 more miles to go and your legs are saying, no, you don't have that many left, you start thinking, what am I made of? And what am I going to do? How would I feel if I don't make it? So
right.
You start delving deep into yourself to find out what you're made of.
So in 1979, Sports Illustrated comes over. You're the defending champion. I remember photos of you and John Dunbar, the guy who was drinking beer the year before. He's in a Superman outfit, and you guys are shaking hands before the race because everybody was like, okay, it's going to be a rematch of John Dunbar against Gordon Haller. Hopefully John won't drink beer this year, and he might be okay. And then there was this other guy from San Diego named Tom Warren, this tavern owner here who owned Tug's Tavern. And what do you remember about that year? Because just the swim itself was brutal.
Well, if we'd done it the day it was scheduled, it would have been even more brutal, and there might not be any survivors. So we had a really bad storm come in, and so we postponed the race a day, although Dunbar didn't want to postpone it because he was a good swimmer.
Right.
So we postponed it a day, and I was happy about that. I could have used a couple more days to make it. Hopefully the water would smooth out. But when we did finally get going, we had 40-knot winds and 6-foot swells, and it was a very scary time. Everybody had a paddler on a surfboard to guide us through because I realized that I'm not quite 6 feet high. Swells are 6 feet high. If I were standing in the trough, I couldn't see over the top to see where I was going. And, of course, I'm in the water, and I don't have glasses on, so I can't see anything anyway. I couldn't follow the rocks on the bottom. That's the best I could do. And finally, my paddler got blown out to sea. He kind of panicked. And
yeah.
And so the boat went out and rescued him, came back and said, "How are you doing?" And I said, "Well, I'm drowning." And they said, "Well, you look good." And then they drove off.
I love that.
And I said, "Wait, I'm drowning." And they didn't hear me.
You're the defending champion. You can't be drowning.
Fortunately, another swimmer came by, and her paddler guided both of us into the end. And I get to the end, come out of the water, and my sponsor says, "You want to quit now?" I said, "No, I just did the hardest part. All I have to do now is ride 112 and run a marathon."
And your swim.
And I did.
Right. And Tom Warren swam 106. You swam like 151.
Yeah.
And probably you were
way slower than the 120 I swam the year before.
You were pretty darn happy to get out of the water, though.
Kind of more like grateful.
Yeah. So you're 45 minutes down to this guy, but you still had the fastest run of the day, right? You ran like 3:43.
Well, actually, it was more like 3:30.
Was it really?
Yeah, it was the fastest one in the race that day.
In the book, it says 3:43.
Well, they aren't really accurate with the numbers back then.
Yeah, just sort of somebody with a stopwatch.
Well, yeah, and I think they were just estimating off a wristwatch. Because the first year, they said I'd ran a 3:30, but it was 3:27 on my watch, so I'm counting my watch. Either way, it was the fastest one.
So an article comes out in Sports Illustrated, and you know, in 78 and 79, 15 starters, 12 finishers. Because of the article in Sports Illustrated, a bunch of us went over there. The following year, it was 108 of us. Article comes out, and was it your sister-in-law who wanted to introduce you to Beth?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
My brother's wife and my wife taught in the same school, and I guess she kind of wanted us to
get together.
To meet anyway. Yeah.
So she gave her the Sports Illustrated article.
Yeah, which didn't bode well for me.
So she didn't want anything to do with you.
She wasn't totally happy with it. No, she said, "I don't want to meet this guy. He's a jerk."
See, and I don't remember anything in that article that made you seem like a jerk, but I'll take Beth's word
for it. Well, I don't either, but, you know.
Yeah. So when you did meet Beth, you guys were obviously kindred spirits, because what was your first date?
Well, we went to the Y where she was a member, and we swam and biked and ran and lifted weights, and they went out for pizza and went to a football game. I said,
a match made in heaven.
Doesn't get any better than that.
I love that.
So this year, 36 years married.
36 years. How about that? And Beth was, what, 3:30 marathoner?
3:34 was her PR, yeah.
I love that. As the Ironman champion, was there a point where, you know, at work and people would start knowing that you were the first Ironman champion? When did that become more prevalent, where more and more people were noticing or understanding your place in our history?
Well, I kind of think it was only about 5 years ago, because for a lot of years, it was no big deal. And, of course, in the early years, nobody knew what it really was unless they were doing the kind of stuff you guys are doing and really interested in that sort of thing. So,
what was nutrition like when you did that first Ironman? What nutrition, and you know, obviously you were training a little differently. Nobody really knew. You guys were sort of guinea pigs. What did you eat and drink throughout that race, besides chocolate chip cookies?
Well, I drank a lot of water, a little orange juice, but mostly Gukinade, ERG.
Yep.
And because I knew Bill Gookin, that was great to know that. And for food, I had, well, the usual orange slices and bananas and things like that. But I had this secret weapon called body ammo. It was amino acids in tablet form. And I took those, and it seemed to help a lot on the run.
It's funny how you were so far ahead of the curve, because you had bikes with Reynolds tubing, and and also nutrition-wise with body ammo. Were you always a student of sort of the physiology of what you were doing?
Yeah, I've been watching things like that since I really started getting serious in my high school running.
Yeah.
I wanted to be the best I could be.
Do you have all your training logs from going way back?
I have training logs all the way back to May of 1969.
Somehow that didn't surprise me.
Stack that high.
It was 69. Do you look back at them? And when you look at everything you've accomplished and you look at where you're at now, do you look back and, you know, wonder how the heck did I do that? Or, and what do you learn from your training logs?
Well, unfortunately, not nearly as much as I was hoping, but it's interesting to look back and see what didn't work. Still working on what does work, although I'm getting a little older for that now. Now I've got to come up with a whole bunch of new different ways to find out what works, because when you're young, you can get better whether you do it right or not. But when you're old, you got to make sure this line is about as level as you can get before you dive down.
Yeah. When you look back at all your racing, was the Ironman win the most important race to you?
It's the most important win I had, I think.
Yeah.
I've had some other pretty decent races.
What do you look at as your the best races to you that you've ever had?
Best race I ever had was the 1975 50-kilometer national championships. Got third. On a day I wasn't even supposed to run.
Was that Long Beach?
It was Hanson Dam.
Okay, on L.A. Nice. Yeah. There's now 45 full Ironmans around the world, 110 Ironman 70.3s. Did you ever have a feeling that the sport, and now we're the Olympic sport, did you ever have a sense that the sport was going to get that big?
Never in a million years. I knew it'd grow, but maybe I didn't think it'd grow anywhere near what marathons did in the 70s, but apparently it's growing faster. At least it's better known.
How have you had to change your training over the years to the aging process?
Well, I don't run multiple times in a day. I'm down to multiple times in a week, you know, 3, 4 maybe.
Yeah. Because back in the day, when I looked at your training logs, there were some days you would run 6, 7 times a day.
Yeah, and then there were days when I'd just go out and run 30 miles for the heck of it. I never knew which I was going to do.
I love that. And the training now, are you still self-coached or you have a coach?
Well, I'm self-modified. I have a coach. He tells me what workouts I should do, and then I decide whether or not I'm going to do them. And in what order. I mean, I try to get all the same workouts in during the week, but I just maybe change the order a little bit to suit my schedule.
How has the technology changed from your perspective? And how much of it do you use? Are you a heart monitor guy, a power meter guy?
Well, now I'm a power meter guy. I do all my indoor workouts are power meter, unless I go to the gym and then I extrapolate the numbers from what the life cycle says. But I know enough from the power meter what my numbers really would be with the workout I do on the stationary bike. Use the heart monitor, not quite as much. Use a Fitbit to monitor my sleeping. Don't care too much for it for daytime stuff, and I miscount steps all over the place. But I do count my steps every day and subtract the running away from that. So, let's see, what else do I do? Of course, I went carbon fiber finally with the bike.
Yes, oh, okay.
That's stepping up. That's probably the biggest one right there.
You probably took 20 pounds off your bike.
Pretty close, yeah. I had an old 531 steel frame that I rode clear through 1998, and it's a road bike.
So yesterday we were out at Triton Man, and probably the average age there, 90% of the people were 21 and under. And then there's us two fossils out there.
Well, we had a couple of other guys.
There was a couple other fossils there, too. That's true.
Three more.
For you to be at something like that and see all these young people loving our sport, that has to be pretty special.
That's even better than when I was a little league coach, because you had all these little kids doing this. I mean, there were some kids who were that big in that race, and I thought that was really fun.
Yeah, it was really fun for him because these were all of Jim Vance's kids. And it used to be, gosh, look at, I'm running by two people that are both combined ages are less than me. You know, you're going by two 30-year-olds, you're going, hey, this is great. Yesterday, a little pod of Jim Vance's kids, there was like 8 of them went by me, and they're all 7, right? So the combined age of 8 was 50, right? And you're going, I have 18 years, and they're killing me. I can't stand this stuff. That's when you're out, it's pretty humbling, right?
That's for sure, but it's also encouraging to know that we've got all these people coming behind us to keep building the sport and hopefully try to get the general population to get a little more fit and healthy.
Nice. Are you in contact with other folks from that first year, from 1978?
Yeah, I talk to Dave Orlowski quite regularly. I just was in an interview with him on Thursday.
Dave was third, and he wore a pair of, he cut off a pair of bike of jeans the night before the race and raced the entire way in his jean shorts.
Who else do we know that did that?
Yeah, I know me, right? How about a round of applause for Mr. Gordon Hella?
Thank you.
Thank you, Gordon. Total honor to have you with us. Any questions from you guys? Yes, sir.